everybody, to the Sun on the Strip podcast. I'm Brock Radke, entertainment writer for the Las Vegas Sun, here to get you caught up on everything that's going on in entertainment from the world-famous Las Vegas Strip. I'm recording this on Tuesday, July 14th, and just a few days ago, Caesars Entertainment announced it will reopen Bally's Las Vegas at 10 a.m. on July 23rd. Last week, I was on this podcast talking about how there were no new announcements, no new reopening dates for more of the Strip's mega resorts. So this is the next one. Caesars has already reopened Caesars Palace, the Flamingo, Harrah's Las Vegas, and Paris Las Vegas, as well as the gaming floor and other amenities at the Link Hotel, including some stuff on the Link Promenade and the High Roller Observation Wheel and Fly Link Zipline attractions. Caesars Entertainment CEO Tony Rodio said the company's resorts continue to see good visitation rates this summer, and so it makes sense to reopen Bally's. Among the amenities that will be available are the Burger Brasserie, Buca di Beppo, and Tequila Taqueria restaurants, as well as the pool. Bally's was also planning to reopen an all-new Indigo Lounge, but with the recent mandates to close all bars, it's not certain that that's going to happen at this time. Speaking of bar closures, that mandate also from a few days ago from Governor Steve Sisolak is being handled in different ways in terms of casino bars. For example, Caesars Entertainment has closed down some of the bar venues that provided live entertainment, such as at Harrah's. They had the piano bar and the outdoor carnival court. Those were both back open again and both providing musical entertainment of some sort. And now they are closed once again. But at MGM properties, that's not necessarily the case. At Bellagio, the Petrosian Lounge is still open with a live pianist. Basically, you just can't go up and sit at the bar if this type of venue is operating as a lounge, which the Petrosian definitely is. Customers are allowed to sit at tables and make reservations and order drinks and drink service and food service there while enjoying the entertainment. Same can be said for the bar at Times Square at New York, New York. Another announced closure of sorts, the Palazzo Tower, the Venetian Palazzo Resort, is no longer taking reservations during the week. So apparently demand not high enough at the two luxury resorts during the week to have both hotel towers open. Makes a lot of sense, since obviously meetings and conventions are a long way off into the future of Las Vegas, and those properties are very much driven, the traffic at those properties very much driven by business. I think we're going to see this happen a lot, not just in terms of hotel rooms, but also restaurants and other venues. They're probably going to adjust their hours as the summer drags on, depending on what kind of visitation we're getting during the week. And one more bit of Strip news. Wynn Las Vegas closed the Lake of Dreams show this week on Monday. Lake of Dreams is shut down for renovations. The statement says the popular water shows will be updated with state-of-the-art technology for 10 new exciting shows. The new Lake of Dreams programming will be unveiled in the fall. The waterfall and some of the lighting effects and music that happens at that area, Lake of Dreams, will continue for now. SW Steakhouse and Parasol Down and Lakeside Restaurant surround that area. So if you're on the patio at those places, you'll still be able to enjoy the waterfall and just the overall niceness of the Lake of Dreams. But it sounds like, you know, this is a kind of entertainment that Las Vegas is able to provide right now. So it sounds like Wynn is going to amp it up and change it around. So we'll be excited to see what the new Lake of Dreams looks like coming this fall. My interview this week is with Carnell Johnson Las Vegas-born singer and musician who is best known, and I would say beloved by locals, as one of the regular singers of the national anthem at Vegas Golden Knights games at T-Mobile Arena. Carnell spent a lot of years as a singing gondolier at the Venetian, but when he sang the national anthem for the first time at a Golden Knights game in the Fortress, and we're going to talk all about this, he kind of became a little bit of a local celebrity overnight. Just a really powerful singer, really talented guy, and he's done a lot of other stuff as well, and you can currently see him performing in Summerlin every week. So enjoy this conversation with the man they call Golden Pipes, Carnell Johnson.
I was doing a little reading up about you, and I didn't know that you're born and raised in Las Vegas, right?
That is 100% correct.
What was it like for you growing up in Las Vegas?
Honestly, people see Las Vegas as this Disneyland for adults sort of haven to kind of do whatever they want. And growing up here is no different than growing up anywhere else. Once you get away from the Strip, we have schools, parks, restaurants, everything else that a normal city has. We just do it on a big, grander scale, and a lot of the things aren't open later or some even 24 hours. So it's really, I mean, I'm used to it, but other people come here and they don't know what to do with themselves sometimes. It's definitely, I think it's different coming here young as opposed to growing here because you don't know anything else. And this is just me personally, because I know people who were born and raised here, and as soon as they graduated college, they got out of Dodge and, you know, didn't look back except to just come visit. But for me, I go visit family. I have family in Northern California, family in Texas. And when I go to visit them, it's a whole nother world to me. And I'm like, how can you guys live here? Not realizing that it's something that most of them have done, if not their entire life, most of their life. So for me, I mean, I have no problem living here. Would I like to go somewhere else? Maybe, you know, a little bit later on in life, but I'm very comfortable here right now.
When did you know that you wanted to sing and kind of work toward a career in music of some sort?
Definitely was very early on. My mom and dad were both kind of performers in their own right. Not anything professional, but they both sang all the way through high school. My mom even sang into college. My dad went into dancing. So the performing arts have been in my family for a long time. Even my aunts, uncles, all like to literally sit around the campfire and sing. So I've been exposed to it for most of my life. And I think the first time I knew I wanted to actually sing was probably high school. In seventh grade, I joined choir. Sixth grade, I was in band. Seventh grade, I decided to switch over choir, and I loved it. And I stayed in it all through seventh, eighth grade, all through high school. And even into college, I got my degree in music education so I could go back and teach choir. And it just kind of has been this huge thing in my life that in some way, shape, or form, I want to be performing. But if I have my choice, singing is definitely that top thing.
Now, being a singing gondolier at the Venetian is one of those only in Vegas jobs. Like, that's the most Vegas-y job you can have, I think.
Yeah, you're probably right there.
How long did you do that for, and what was that experience like?
So I was there, I went away to Arizona State my first year of college in 2001, and when I came back, I was looking for a job, and I had friends who had stayed here, was like, hey, the Venetian is hiring singing gondoliers, you should go try out. So I went and tried out, got it in 2001. Being a young kid and dumb, I was always trying to party and called in to work a lot. So in 2003, I ended up leaving there. Actually, not so much leaving as they just stopped scheduling me. They never let me go or never fired me. They just took me off the schedule, but didn't give me any official word. And once I kind of got past that phase, settled down a little bit, I went back in 2011 and did it for 8 years. So I guess you could say a total of right around 10 years if you take the two different times that I did it.
Yeah, that's quite a while to do that. And like I said, that is such an interesting job because you are performing every day like you would be if you were, you know, part of a lounge act or in some show on the strip or whatever. But people don't necessarily think of that job as like being in the entertainment industry in Vegas in the same way, right?
Oh, yeah. It's a completely different thing because a lot of these other like shows, for example, you know, you're on stage for some of them, it will be as long as 2 hours, but most of them are between 80 to 100 minutes. But for a singing gondolier, you're on there 5-6 hours a day, talking, singing, entertaining, physical activity. It's a much different type of Vegas job than being a showgirl or being in Cirque or Blue Man Group or you know, any one of the staple Vegas shows.
It sounds really demanding too. Did that experience did it change you in terms of the kind of performer that you are or the kind of singer that you wanted to be?
I mean, it definitely had an influence. I wouldn't say that it changed anything because most of the singers are classically trained through, if you know, maybe college, or some of them have gone on to do some sort of opera training in their life. And that's what I did. When I got my music degree in music education, it was an emphasis in vocal. So I was classically trained as well. But then, you know, you get your pop singers that come in, you get your, just folk singers that come in, you get all these other people. And so I'm being exposed to a whole bunch of different type of music, like, definitely made me think about, do I want to keep singing classically, which I love doing, but I also like hearing all of these other styles. And so it gave me the soapbox, because when you're singing, everybody stands around you. It gave me the soapbox to try out new styles and, you know, see what else I could do with my voice, which I found really exciting.
Of course, most people in Las Vegas know you from singing the national anthem at Vegas Golden Knights games at T-Mobile Arena. Before you went through the process of auditioning for that gig, had you sung the anthem before in a professional capacity like that?
I mean, I guess you could say yes. Nothing on the national side, but I had sung for the old Vegas team, the 51s. I'd sung for the Running Rebels. I had done it a couple of times, so it was nothing new to me. You know, I didn't have to learn anything different. I just had to do what I already knew. But then it became this whole different thing when the Knights made their Stanley Cup run in their debut year, and when I sang for the first few times, they kept winning. And yeah, I always tell people I was in the right place at the right time on that one, which is a lot of what the business is.
Well, yeah, that first season, of course, was a phenomenon that no one will ever forget, but you weren't just in the right place at the right time. You knocked it out of the park. And this is another thing I didn't realize until today, is it true the first time that you sang at a game, you paused and you let the crowd sing Night, as they do, and has become tradition.
So yes, that did happen. There were two things that I always say contributed to that. One was I had friends and coworkers who had gone to games, and I told them, like, oh, I'm gonna be singing the anthem, and they're like, well, you know that when they say gave proof through the night, that everybody yells it. And I was like, oh, that's really cool, not really thinking about it. And
I hadn't been to a game before I sang, so I can't attest to anybody else, but I don't know if anybody else stopped when they said ninth, and from what people had told me, it's like, no, you were the first one to do it. And I was like, oh, well, that's cool. I just kind of went off of what my friends told me, and I was like, well, if they're going to yell it, why do I need to sing it? I can take a nice breath there and get ready for the next phrase. And then the only other thing that they told me that I was the first one to do, from a young age, I've always been taught face the flag when the national anthem is being performed. So I went out there, and first thing I asked was, hey, where's the flag? And they said, oh, it's over there. And I was just like, oh, okay, just wanted to make sure. Well, when they rolled out the carpet, I guess everyone else had faced the arena, which puts the flag behind you. And I didn't even ask or do anything. I just straight out turned and faced the flag. Well, since the cameraman was so used to everyone facing the arena, he was back there. So he's behind me at this point. So about 20, 30 seconds in, I hear this crunching sound. And that's him tiptoeing around to get in front of me so that he can film my face. Because everyone else is just like, well, I'm going to perform for the audience. And I'm like, it's not about the audience. It's about the flag. So I'm going to perform for the flag. And, you know, everyone else, well, I know they'll be listening, but this is where I was taught to go. So this is where I'm going to go. It's something I'll always remember because I can still hear like the sound of he had the grips on his feet, still hear them like sticking into the ice as he was tiptoeing around.
I'm sure there are a lot of things about that experience that are just kind of etched in your mind forever. That opened a lot of doors for you, right?
Oh, it opened so many, and one of them being kind of thrust into the entertainment industry here in Vegas. Ever since I was 20, 21, I started auditioning for shows, but because of the look that Vegas is going for, I was never cast in anything. And this is back when Vegas had a lot of musicals and stuff. They don't really have that anymore. Mm-hmm. But once I did the national anthem, I started getting other people saying, hey, will you come sing Home Means Nevada? Will you come sing God Bless America? All these different people. And that opened up even more doors. To a good friend, Mark Chinook, who started Monday's Dart a little over 5 years ago and is now performing it, or now has it at his place at the Space. And he's like, hey, come in and sing. And so now I've been going there, and I've gotten to sing other things other than the national anthem. So it's been a wild ride for the last couple of years, definitely.
Now tell me about Cover Lane, your acoustic duo that you've been developing.
Yeah, so one of my good friends, her name's Lene Myers, she moved here, I want to say 7 years ago, right around 7 years ago, and she was put into the show Evil Dead the Musical, which was on the Strip at the time, and I happened to be the musical director of it for about a year. And that's where we first kind of met, but we didn't really know each other. We just kind of knew of each other. And ever since then, once the show closed, or once she left the show, she's always trying to get back into that musical thing. That's what she's always wanted to do. So she'd done a lot of shows out at Spring Mountain Ranch for Super Summer Theater, did some stuff in town, and nothing ever took off. And one day I was just like, let me call her up and see if she'd be interested in doing this, because I would love to start gigging around town. And I'm just looking for someone who is also looking for the same thing and who has an amazing voice, which her voice is phenomenal. Like when we go out and gig, there are more people, which rightfully so, go up to her and say, oh my gosh, your voice is amazing. And when I asked her, I was like, hey, do you want to do this? She was like, oh, that'd be great. I'd love to. And so last year, right around this time, we started it up and started playing mainly kind of restaurants, but in with a loungy feel, not so much, you know, like going to the Bellagio and they've got the piano player sitting there just playing stuff. It's that kind of feel, but as people are eating and dining and we're talking to them, we're having fun, and that's where it got started. And it's gotten a good following. We have a set night right now at the Players Locker over in downtown Summerlin, every Wednesday night from 7 to 9, we go there and do our thing. And we're just waiting for more things to open up because we've talked to them and like, we want to have music back. We're just not ready to open up yet. But once we are, you guys are first on our list to call. And, I love doing that kind of stuff, especially just sitting there and playing guitar and enjoying the evening. It's been exactly what the people want and need right now, is just some form of live music that they can go and enjoy, socially distancing at the same time, which is great because we're out on the patio, so there's not a big crowd or anything.
Another really cool thing that you worked on in the last, I guess, year or so is Hamiltunes at the Space. And I saw your post about Hamilton the other day, since the film has been out on Disney Plus and everybody's been watching that again or watching it for the first time. What's it been like to work on the Hamilton show and get so close to this really beloved material?
You know, it's been great. I first listened to Hamilton about 5 months after it premiered, in September of 2015 was when it first started its run. And people were telling me, you got to listen to this, you got to listen to this. I was like, yeah, whatever, whatever. And then in January of 2016, I finally was like, all right, I'm not doing anything right now. I was actually doing a show out in San Diego at the time. And I had a lot of free time during the day. So I was like, let me see what these people are talking about. So I downloaded it onto my computer. I would start listening to it, and I was like sitting around and just got hooked. And literally for a year and a half, I played nothing but Hamilton in my car when I would drive back and forth to Vegas to San Diego, or I'm just driving around the city. I literally played nothing else and just fell in love with this type of music or this musical, because Lin-Manuel like lifted all of the people that influenced him. And he's, I think, a year or two older than me. So he listened to a lot of the same people in high school and middle school that I was listening to that influenced. And you can hear that in the music. And it just really turned me on to it. And just learning it, learning the show, wanting to watch the show. And I still, even though I'm getting up there, I know I still have a chance. I want to be in the show at some point in my life, just because it's that important to me.
Things are definitely on hold still in a lot of ways, in terms of live performance in Las Vegas. But what are you kind of working on now, or what kind of plans do you have for the future?
For the time being, I'm just really focusing on my duo with Lene, with Cover Lane, just making sure that we keep performing and playing and just keeping my musical chops up, if nothing else, just to be ready for when this whole pandemic does end, that we're ready to get out there. And, you know, if we need to go 5-6 days a week, we can go 5-6 days a week. And other than that, it's just whatever I can do. I would love for sports to come back so that I can get, or I should say hockey, to come back so that I can get back in T-Mobile and sing there. And that's just one of my biggest pleasures, is singing in front of 18,000 people, and it's kind of just all become very close knit there, and I can't wait to do it again.
That's going to do it for this episode of The Sun on the Strip. A very special thanks to Carnell Johnson for joining me this week. You can see him perform as Cover Lane at Wolfgang Puck Players Locker at downtown Summerlin Wednesday nights. You can catch past episodes of The Sun on the Strip at lasvegassun.com/podcasts or on Apple Podcasts. Thanks again for listening. Catch you next week.